You're listening to the European Tour Race to Dubai show with Robert Lee and Ewan Murray.
Hello and welcome to a special edition of the Race to Dubai show as we look back at the four major championships of 2018. At Augusta in April, Patrick Reed held his nerve to claim his first major title at the Masters.
Everyone else was saying how great I was playing all week, but then, you know, come Saturday night and Sunday morning, they're like, oh, well, we think Rory's going to win. That takes off a little bit of that pressure off of me because I can just go out and try to play golf.
Then in June, Brooks Koepka gets his hands on the US Open trophy for a second successive year.
You know, to have my name on there twice is pretty incredible, and to go back-to-back is even more extraordinary. It feels so special, and I'm truly honored.
Then Francesco Molinari secured his first major at the 147th Open Championship.
For the first time, I felt like I was ready for it. I knew I was going to do, you know, what I needed to do. Playing with Tiger makes it even more special, you know. I couldn't have written it any better.
And the USPGA Championship was a second major title of the year for brilliant Brooks Koepka, despite a major wrist injury at the start of 2018.
Looking where I was in my couch watching the Masters, to think I would do this, I would have laughed at you. To do what I've done is very impressive. I can't even believe it.
We'll hear from all four winners as we review another unforgettable year of major championship golf. Plus, we'll look ahead and make our predictions for the big four titles of 2019. I'm Robert Lee, and alongside me is Ewan Murray. And Ewan, well, it was a pretty special year for the majors.
It surely was that. Every single one of them had a big story to tell. And for me, the outstanding moment was Molinari, the first Italian major champion. And when you think the Ryder Cup, once it's back on home soil again, it will be in Italy. Fairy tale stuff.
Yeah, it sure was. And I'm delighted to say that joining us from across the water is Bob Bubka, a golfing broadcast legend. Bob, how was the major season for you?
Well, it was absolutely incredible when you think about it. At the start of the year, Brooks Koepka basically was an injured golfer, and we had no idea that his wrist injury would heal sufficiently so that he could defend his title at the U.S. Open and then go on and win the PGA Championship. I mean, two majors in one year. Remarkable stuff.
Yeah, we're going to go through these majors in calendar order. So we've got to start with Augusta in the springtime. Final round, Patrick Reed teeing off with Rory McIlroy. It was dream stuff, Ewan.
Yes, and I guess many would have thought that McIlroy was the one that was going to come through and take the green jacket. But I thought Patrick Reed's final round was one of the best rounds of the season because, quite simply, he didn't have his best game over these 18 holes. And you know what it's like if you're playing well, 67 becomes easy. If you're playing poorly and you haven't got your A game there, then 71 becomes quite difficult. I didn't like the publicity that Patrick Reed got after he won that, all the talk about what happened at college and mum and dad and all that. I don't think enough was centred on the excellent performance on that Sunday afternoon in Georgia.
How many people do you think were cheering for Patrick Reed in that final round, Bob?
Well, there was a couple cheering for him, his mother and father, but they weren't on the grounds. They were watching on TV. Patrick Reed has become somewhat of a mystery in the world of professional golf. It goes all the way back to Doral. He wins a World Golf Championship event. He takes that opportunity to proclaim himself one of the top five players in the world. People took exception to that. But basically, he's pretty much going on to prove his own statement. I mean, you win the Masters, the heroics in the Ryder Cup. He is probably one of the top five players in the world. So everybody that criticized those comments probably has to take a step back.
So with a three-shot buffer to Rory McIlroy teeing off, McIlroy makes a great save for a par at the first, par for Reed. Then at the second, Rory hits a drive and a 6-iron to 3 feet, and he has a putt to tie Reed, misses it, and then Reed makes it from off the back edge at three, which you can't do. You can't hold that putt. Maybe that was it, right, in that little microcosm of 45 minutes.
Well, there's always turning points in the final round, and I say points, plural, at Augusta, because things can change so quickly there. In the end, Ricky Fowler was the one really who pushed him home there, and Fowler once again second in a major and still looking for his first major title. And of course, a massive year now ahead for Ricky Fowler. He's 30 years of age, and I wouldn't say time running out. He's still got 10 or 15 years at the very top, but I think it's a very important year for Fowler. And when you finish second in majors, sometimes you're unlucky. I mean, Patrick Reed's short game over the course of the last nine holes, I thought was quite exceptional.
It really was. So Ricky Fowler finished with a birdie at the last to push Reed all the way. He knew he had to make par. And Jordan Spieth, Bob, 64 in the final round.
Yeah, 9 under par. It looked like he was going to come from absolutely nowhere to win another green jacket. It just didn't materialize. But when you take a closer look at the scorecard of Patrick Reed, you note that his final seven holes, he plays it in 2 under par. And boy, with a green jacket on the line, you go 2 under for the last seven, you're getting the job done.
All the others came at him. Ewan was right. He was dogged and determined. And even though he didn't have his super best A game, Ewan, that kind of shows you how tough he is.
I think we saw that Doral, which Bob mentioned a few moments ago, and the intelligent way he played the 18th at Doral. There's been all sorts of golfing disasters there down the years, and he laid up with the second shot and popped it on the green in 3, and that was enough. A couple of putts later, he was the champion. Very young man at that time as well, still a young man. Still a lot of good years ahead of him. The one thing that surprised me was that he didn't press on and win another couple of times throughout the course of 2018, but maybe that will come next year.
How onerous, Bob, do you think having a green jacket is? We saw Sergio not really perform after he got his, same for Patrick Reed. How much of a burden or an anvil is it to carry around?
Well, you know, it's one of the greatest things that you can ever achieve in the world of golf. I mean, you ask just about any player if they could win just one tournament, a good portion of those answers will be all the same. They'd like to win the Masters. But once you win the Masters, then the expectation level on you escalates tremendously. So we'll have to wait and see with Patrick Reed if he can handle it. Can he go back down there in April and win for the second time in a row? It's hard to tell. The Masters, it's a different breed. I mean, you know, you're in a different locker room. You go to the champions' dinner. There's so many aspects of the Masters unlike any other of the major championships.
And, of course, it is the only major to always play at the same venue year after year. So all these little things, these little knickknacks that go along with having a green jacket, the champions, the club that you're in for winning a major at Augusta, very special indeed. Let's hear what Patrick Reed said after claiming his first major title.
It's just a dream come true. I remember growing up just dreaming about, you know, and always thinking about making putts on the putting green, you know, to win the Masters, win green jacket. And to be able to sit here and actually be wearing the green jacket, it's a dream come true. I've always wanted to become one of the best players in the world. To be able to become one of those players, you have to win tournaments like this. You have to win the majors. And wanted to be a Masters champion, always wanted to be part of that brotherhood and that small group. And, you know, to be able to finally, you know, succeed in that, I can't wait for what it brings, and you know, I look forward to it.
What, Ewan, are the strong points of his game?
I think mentally he's very strong. I see a lot of Colin Montgomery in Patrick Reed in many ways. When he gets out on the golf course, he's 100% him. He's not looking around. He's not waiting on someone to make a mistake. He's not waiting on someone to fire a good shot in there. He's only thinking about what Patrick Reed does well. And that's what impressed me so much with the final round. As I say, you play well, 67s and 8s are very easy. Final day, Masters, Sunday, didn't play that well. 15 under par, wins by one.
He said, Bob, he felt less pressure because most people, and he felt most people wanted Rory to win. Do you think that's probably fair?
I think it's absolutely fair. I mean, when he got on the first tee, you could sense that maybe we were on the threshold of history, Rory McIlroy needing that Masters to complete his Grand Slam. And, you know, when they both teed off, I would say 90% of the crowd was in Rory McIlroy's corner, despite the fact that Patrick Reed, hometown boy from Augusta, Georgia. So I don't think he felt the pressure that Rory felt. And certainly his play proved that he could handle the pressure.
Well, Patrick Reed was the first man ranked outside the world's top 20 to win the Masters since 2011. He was ranked 24th at the time. He'd never broken 70 in 4 previous Masters. That is incredible. This year, of course, he went 69, 66, 67, and the all-important 71 that got him over the line. and he came close to being the first ever player to record four rounds in the 60s throughout a Masters at Augusta. That would have been special, Ewan.
It surely would, and you'd think that would have been done down the years with all the great players that have their name on that tournament trophy and those who have the green jacket. You'd swear that somebody somewhere has had four rounds in the 60s, but it's the pressure, it's the quality of the event, it's the title and the history that goes with it.
Now, runner-up for the third time in his major career was Ricky Fowler, and Ewan's already talked about him getting to the age of 30, Bob, and needing to make it happen. How big is 2019 going to be for Ricky?
Well, I think it's going to be a huge year. You know, it's a milestone, 30. You start thinking about, wow, you know, time is running through that hourglass a little faster than I thought. I would think, you know, when Ricky Fowler finished in the top four of all four majors in 1 year, that everybody said, well, by the time he's 30, he's going to have won, you know, maybe one, two, three major championships. But I remember the same thing being said about Sergio Garcia when he was just a young kid going up against Tiger at Medina, and he didn't win the PGA championship. But everybody in the media in unison, oh, don't worry about Sergio. He's going to win plenty of majors. Well, you know, a lot of people find out that, you know, you always say it's tough to win a major. You don't really realize how tough it is. But if you need further proof, just ask Colin Montgomery. Just ask Lee Westwood. Ask Luke Donald. I mean, ask Ian Poulter. I mean, you know, the list goes on and on of great players that have done great things, but yet still have not connected to win their first major.
So Fowler with his second place. It was third for Spieth, Ewan, whose Masters record is a win, 2 seconds and a third in five goes.
That's fair, isn't it?
That is unbelievable.
It was a wonderful final round. Beautiful ball striking from Spieth. And a lot had been talked about that he wasn't putting as well. Very difficult to match the quality of his putting of 2 years ago. There's not much wrong with it, as we saw in his major victories, but it was a wonderful run through the field. It wasn't quite enough in the end.
And John Rahm, I know, Bob, is one of your favourites. He finished fourth, 11 under par, 69 the final round, with back-to-back birdies in the middle of the back nine, the 13th and the 14th. It was all going well until he found the water at 15.
Yeah, that certainly was that. But I'll say this much about John Rahm. Right now, I would tab him as my favourite to win a major amongst the players that have never won a major. He just seems to have it all. He has a little of Seve, he has a little of Sergio in him. He's just a tremendous talent and hits it so far that he literally, when he gets going, guys, he can bring Augusta National to its knees.
Are you a fan of the John Rahm game, Ewan?
Definitely. You look at that three-quarter swing and you wonder where the power comes from, the power he generates. And a lot talked about his length off the tee. There's so much more to John Rahm. He's a good putter. He's a very good hauler-out. He's a confident player. He's an attacking player. And that's why he's so popular. Spectators love to see that.
What a lot of people might not know is, I know you look at him, you think he's quite a unit. He was a very good taekwondo fighter when he was younger. And when you do those martial arts when you're young, you get those fast twitch fibres. So I know it's only a three-quarter backswing. The speed he gets on the way down is unbelievable.
Astonishing.
It is astonishing.
Yeah.
And you, and I'm going to go to you with Rory, who he has that weight of expectation every time he goes to Augusta, because he's the poster boy for the perfect game for Augusta, and he hasn't won that major, but he's won the other three. What's going to happen in 2019?
Well, the pressure gets greater as the years tick by without a victory at Augusta. And I feel a little for McIlroy, because for him that week, it's not just the Masters, it's the Grand Slam. Mm. And that surely is going to add more pressure on his young shoulders. I think he is capable of winning there. I think his game's beautifully suited to there. But a lot talked about the right-to-left flight at Augusta, which he possesses naturally. Not enough talked about how important the wedge shots are at Augusta. If you've got spinning greens there, you know what they can do with the pins. They can tuck them away and only the best will find them. So there will continue to be a lot of pressure on McIlroy. He thinks he can go back there and definitely win around that course, and that's half the battle. He's got to keep believing that.
OK, Ewan, please, the top 10 from the Masters.
There was a tie in 10th place, Dustin Johnson and Tony Finau, who went on to have a really good major season. Mark Leishman's been knocking on the door in the Masters in recent years. He finished in 9th place, then made a four-way tie in 5th. Bubba Watson, two-time winner, of course. Stenson enjoyed his best ever Masters performance. Young Cameron Smith was up there at 9-under, and joining them was McIlroy after that disappointing final round. Ram was alone in 4th at 11-under par. Two shots better off after that final round of 64, Jordan Spieth and Fowler. So close at 14-under, but 15-under was the mark, and Reed had his first major.
Tommy Fleetwood, worth mentioning that in round 3 he shot 66, which put him in contention, but Sunday, 74, saw him finish tied 17th. But as we'll see later on in the major run, things turned around in the final round for Tommy Fleetwood. Tiger, by the way, tied 32nd at plus one. And defending champion Sergio Garcia, an unwanted piece of Masters history for him. The Spaniard signed for 13 on the 15th in the first round after hitting 5 balls into the water. It's the joint worst score on any hole at Augusta National. He wouldn't have enjoyed the half an hour it took to do that.
Now, 13 unlucky for some there, for sure.
Now, to the second major of the year, of course, before 2019. It was always the US Open in June, and Brooks Koepka held off a stunning charge by Tommy Fleetwood at Shinnecock Hills to become the first man to successfully defend the US Open title in 29 years. Koepka started Sunday in a share of the lead, with Fleetwood 6 shots behind him, but when the Race to Dubai champion signed for a brilliant record-equalling 63, he was just one back from Koepka. But Koepka signed for a 68, a one-over par total, and a one-shot victory on a golf course, Ewan, that through the week, all in all, was incredibly tough.
It was tough, but at never any stage did the USGA lose the golf course. I think there was some strange pin positions, which we might talk about in a few moments' time, but it's always a strong test. There's always going to be a breeze there. The greens are always set up and almost like upturned saucers, so only the best will do for the second shots there, and they must be played from the fairway. It was no surprise that the winning score was such a high one.
Well, let's hear what Brooks Koepka said after the win.
You know, we didn't drive it that great, but, you know, you can make up so much with a hot putter. Yep. And I feel like that's kind of what I was doing. Rich Beem at the Open Championship was talking about how there's only 280-some guys that have ever won a major. And once you keep doing it, I mean, once you win the second one, he told me it goes down a lot lower. And what'd you say, 80? It's pretty incredible to be a two-time major champion. I think that's neat, man. It really is.
Incredibly cool guy under pressure, Bob Koepka, wouldn't you say?
Yes, but something remarkable happened on Tuesday prior to the start of the U.S. Open at Shinnecock. Jack Nicklaus had been brought in to serve as an unofficial starter. The USGA tried something different. They invited all winners of USGA events the previous year to put on a little four-hole exhibition. I happened to be up on the tee. Jack was standing there when Brooks Koepka came up, and Brooks said to him, quote unquote, "Mr. Nicklaus, if you don't mind, I'd like to just ask you a couple of questions because I don't want to be known, you know, after my career is done, as just the winner of one major. And since you've won more than anybody that's ever played the game, can you give me some advice?" And Jack went on for about 20 minutes saying this and saying that, and Brooks Koepka was like a sponge. And I'm not saying now that because he had that talk with Jack, he went on. But what impressed me was that Brooks Koepka, knowing that he had already won a U.S. Open, did not want to be known as a one-time major winner. And boy, little did we know at that point, he not only would be not only a one-time winner, a two-time winner, and now a three-time winner.
And what's impressive about that little story, Ewan, is that Jack took the time to spend time with Brooks and give him his best advice.
It's the one gift you can give to people, is your own time.
It sure is. Koepka was 7-over par at one point during his second round. Do you remember that, Ewan? We were commentating, and he was just going backwards and falling off the shelf.
Yeah, and didn't really look that interested at the time as well. But I think throughout the week, one or two of the players, in fact, more than that, were quite frustrated the way the course was set up. And this is an old golf course. It's a revered golf course in the United States and really needs to be left alone and let them go out there and challenge. But he wasn't the only one who went through difficult periods over the course of the 4 days, but in the end, he got a hold of himself early enough and gave himself a talking to, whatever he did, and found his best game again.
Koepka was the first man to win back-to-back US Open since Curtis Strange in 1989, and it's hard to win one US Open, never mind two in two consecutive years, just incredible. And he was the first to win consecutive majors since Padraig Harrington won his second Open Championship in 2008. Ewan, it's incredibly rare to do that.
Especially with the start to the season that Koepka had. You wondered, was he going to play at all in 2018? Was he going to need a medical exemption to go ahead and compete, having not struck a ball in 2018. It's an astonishing performance and a great story. And again, a young man who's got so many more chances to add to the three he now has.
Well, in the previous major, the Masters, Tommy Fleetwood didn't finish as he would have liked to, but that certainly wasn't the story at Shinnecock Hills. Let's hear what he had to say after his final round of 63.
So many positives, so many great things. I had a chance of shooting a 62, and at the end of the day, I got within one of winning when I was so far back at the start of the day. So it's been a great day. It's easy to look at it and think I was one shy, and you can be disappointed, but there's so many positives to look at and so much that you can take from it and learn from it. And again, it's another major where I've ended up sort of up there at the end of the day. Majors and tournaments are 72 holes, so it doesn't matter how you kind of do it. If you end up there at the end of the week, it's a positive. The putt on 18, I actually wanted more for the 62 at the time. Obviously, that's the putt that will play on your mind because that was the last shot you hit and that was your chance. But your score is your score. I'm not going to dwell too much on it. It is what it is. But again, I got very close to winning a major.
Bob, you would have been horrified that your revered Shinnecock Hills might have given up a 62 in the final round.
Well, you know, I chuckle when you say that. I mean, it certainly would have been a great round, but the USGA really set up the golf course way too hard on Saturday. Ewan referenced some of the hole locations that were selected, borderline unfair. And then because they set it up too difficult for Saturday, they overcompensated and made it way too easy on Sunday. But still, an opportunity to shoot 62 there was incredible. One thing about the Koepka victory, I don't know if it's been discussed that much, but in the final round, who is Koepka paired with? None other than Dustin Johnson, his good friend, somebody that he's very comfortable with, somebody that he works out with, practices with. So it was the ideal pairing for Koepka to handle the pressure of trying to win back-to-back U.S. Opens, being paired with somebody that is a real good friend of yours.
Well, let's just round off the Tommy Fleetwood conversation. We didn't know at the time, but his year was going to continue to improve.
I guess you could say that was just another block in the foundations. And whereas the course was easier on Sunday, I would never class it
never
as easy. There was a lot of high scores in the final round. And I think the USGA have to be careful in moving forward. They look at that score from Tommy Fleetwood. He's a very special player who's playing at the very top of his form. If they continue to set courses up the way they did on Saturday, I think there's one or two players will say, look, you know, I don't really need to play in that. They seem obsessed with the winning score being on par or somewhere around there. Why not make the par 68? Why not take out all of the par fives and make the par 68 and give them the course as it is? You will still get Tommy Fleetwood 63s because when these guys are good, they're very good. And you'll still get the odd 74 and 5 when players don't play well. Shinnecock is a good enough test. Oakmont was a good enough test. No need to change it.
Let's talk about then what you just alluded to there, Ewan, the conditions on Saturday when I remember Zach Johnson coming off the golf course being interviewed and he said they've lost it. It's you know, some ridiculous pins. And we saw what happened to Phil Mickelson. Talk about that, Bob.
Well, I hate talking about it because it's a stain on a brilliant career of Phil Mickelson. But when he decides to start playing hockey on a green, hitting a moving ball and then even trying to make the excuse that he had it planned. And, you know, it was just it was a debacle. And certainly there's no place in golf for that. I guarantee you right now, Phil regrets that incident as much as he does anything else. Of course, he's probably feeling a little bit better now after he won $9 million in that dubious match against Tiger Woods just a few weeks ago. But, you know, getting back to Shinnecock, the whole locations, they were atrocious on Saturday. They really were. And, you know, Zach Johnson is as fine a human being on and off the golf course, a man of strong faith. When he turns on the USGA and is critical of some of their decisions, you know that there's a problem.
To continue on the Mickelson theme, I remember he came off after that round and spoke to our television station, and I remember my words were nonsense, and he could have turned the whole thing around by saying, look, I just lost it out there. I got over frustrated and I lost it. And his wife, Amy, I think, said it all at the end of Saturday evening. My husband is a really good man. He just had a bad day.
Yeah, I think that the problem was with Phil that he tried to find some sort of convoluted explanation for what he did, like he was trying to take advantage of the rules, and it was just a mess in the end. If he'd just said, look, the course was too ridiculous, I lost the head, I'm sorry, everyone would have forgotten about it. Anyway, it's done and dusted. I'm sure he doesn't look back on that fondly, Phil Mickelson, but he has got 9 million reasons to be a bit more pucker at the end of the year and a bit more chipper, that's for sure. Top 10, please, Ewan, at the US Open.
There was a tie for 10th place. Justin Rose was alongside the Players' Champion, Webb Simpson. There was a four-way tie for 6th, Daniel Berger. Tyrrell Hatton, excellent performance. Xander Schauffele, of course, the Tour Champion from the year before. And Henrik Stenson followed his 5th place at the Masters with a 6th place at the US Open. Into the top five, Tony Finau enjoyed his second top 10 in two majors. Patrick Reed, the Masters champion, once again showing some fine form. He finished at plus 4 in 4th place. And the top three, Dustin Johnson, Tommy Fleetwood after that never-to-be-forgotten round of 63, but it wasn't quite enough to stop Brooks Koepka getting his hands on the US Open for the second time.
Well, that's two down and two to go. Traditionally, the third major of the season is the 147th Open Championship, and here's a brief flavour of the final round at Carnoustie.
In from Tiger Woods. He's on the march.
Yes, and Tiger Woods, another birdie for today. Things are heating up here.
Jordan Spieth will drop to 6 under par.
Tiger Woods will make a double bogey on 11, and he'll move back to 5 under par for the championship.
Eagle for Rory, a punch of the air. What a putt from Rory. Unbelievable.
He's in a share of the lead now, Rory McIlroy. Let's tell you, it's a six-way tie.
Never any doubt. Into the hole from Francesco Molinari, and he leads the Open Championship.
Great, great golf shot there by Molinari, and he's actually got it inside Tiger Woods to about 5 or 6 feet from the hole.
Rolls it forward, and in it goes. Listen to that roar. And a punch of the air from Francesco Molinari. What a performance. What a performance. 8 under par.
That kind of brings it all back, Ewan, doesn't it? Listen to that.
That was wonderful. That was like from years gone by. That's the great thing. When you just hear the voice, you have to make up the pictures yourself in your mind. A lovely couple of minutes.
And of course, you being arguably in your time, Bob, the biggest Tiger fan in existence, you must have been biting your nails as Tiger hit the front on that back nine.
Well, when Tiger took the lead on the back nine on Sunday, I remember pausing just for a moment and basically said to myself, I never thought that I would see this day again. And quite honestly, I thought from that point on, he would steamroll Molinari and win his 15th major. But it was not to be, which is a great testament to the play of Francesco Molinari, who, you know, to win your first major is one thing. To win when you're playing with Tiger Woods and you're trailing Tiger on the back nine is another thing entirely. What a performance. One for the ages. Obviously reminded me of, you know, Carnoustie in 53 when Ben Hogan made his only trip to the Open Championship and came away with the victory. And this one's for you, Robert Lee. Following Ben Hogan on that final Sunday in 1953 for the entire 18 holes, none other than Frank Sinatra.
That's impressive. I didn't know that. Well, Ben certainly did it his way, didn't he? The final round, Ewan. When Tiger hit the front, I would like to know the official television figures in the United States when people were getting wind of Tiger's hit the front at the Open.
I don't think just in the United States, I think all over the world. He'd fallen so far from such a lofty position, and here he was rising again. I thought it was fantastic when he hit the shot at 10 and managed to get it on the front of the green from a very difficult place. And I must say, when he hit the front, I thought he's going to be the man to beat. But he hadn't been there for a long time. A strange decision with the club he used at 11. That surprised me. And maybe that was a sign of a lack of confidence that he always had when he was out in front, especially in the final day. But certainly it lifted the Open Championship and it lifted the players around him. There's no doubt about that.
And he still hasn't come from behind to win a major championship yet, Tiger Woods. Maybe it's going to happen in 2019. An amazing situation at one point, Bob, with half a dozen players tied at the top.
It really was. I mean, it was electrifying there. I mean, you could feel, any major championship brings its own electricity on the final day. But when you add Tiger Woods to the mix and the possibility of the first Italian player ever to win a major, it had all the ingredients. And boy, we were not disappointed, certainly, with the outcome. That Carnoustie open win by Molinari is going to be talked about for a long time to come.
Well, Tiger faltered after getting in front at the 11th and the 12th. Then we really must pay homage to Francesco Molinari, who had not won a major championship. And now the picture was becoming clear to him, Ewan. He had to just keep going and be dogged and resilient and get it done somehow. And he managed to do that.
And he had to have his very best simply because of the number of people that were in with a chance of winning. And I say number of people, players with big names, players who were playing well at the time. I thought the up and down at 16 was very important, having just got up and down at 15. But you look at the back nine on Saturday, no drop shots. You look at the whole 18 on Sunday, no drop shots. And in a major championship, that's always going to work.
If you think you've got to par that last hole to win, the 18th at Carnoustie, I can't really think of a hole I'd like to play least than that.
Well, that saddened me what modern technology has done to that hole, because if you go back to 99, Paul Laurie was hitting in a 4-iron there. Yes, it was very different weather conditions, but it wasn't into the wind, and Paul was hitting a 4-iron, one of the shots of our lifetime to win his Open Championship there. But nevertheless, you think of Miller, you think of Watson and the trouble they got in down the right-hand side when they were trying to win, Watson eventually beating Jack Newton in a playoff, Miller losing by taking six at 18. The drive was arrow-like. It had no draw, it had no fade. It was just thumped down the middle of the fairway. And then, of course, you still have something else to do. And Molinari just made the task that little bit easier. It was a wonderful way to finish what I thought was one of the great Open Championships in recent years.
Let's hear from Francesco Molinari, the champion golfer of the year.
For the first time, I felt like I was ready for it. It could have happened, it could have not happened, but I knew I was going to do, you know, what I needed to do. Playing with Tiger makes it even more special, you know. I couldn't have written it any better. And, you know, when you're holding this, it changes a few things, but it's been a long journey, you know. A lot of help from all the team. I think that the last few weeks, the last month or so, has been just confidence. Winning at Wentworth after coming close so many times gave me more confidence than winning in the States, even more because I knew not a lot of Europeans had done it. And here we are.
When the final round was unfolding, Bob, were you a believer? Did you think Molinari could get it done, Francesco?
To be honest, I did not think he could get it done. Although, you know, I knew that he was an excellent ball striker. I always thought that maybe his putting held him from getting to the pinnacle. And then certainly when Tiger forged ahead, I felt strongly that, well, this is going to be too much pressure for the brilliant Italian player. But boy, was I wrong. And he showed mettle, and he showed what it takes to win a major. And to win a major on one of the toughest golf courses in the world, Carnoustie, playing alongside of Tiger Woods. I mean, 20 years from now, 30 years from now, they're going to be talking about that Open Championship. It was a special one, won by a very special guy.
And incredible, Ewan, given that he's not especially keen on Lynx golf, and doubly not especially keen on Carnoustie.
I'm not sure many competitors are keen on Carnoustie because it's such an exacting test. And it was different this summer in the sense we had a really dry summer and players were driving the first green. I mean, that's never, ever been heard of at Carnoustie before. But when you look at the final two rounds, and I mentioned the back nine on Saturday, the front nine on Saturday was fairly exceptional for Molinari as well. 36 holes worth, no drop shots around there is fantastic because at some point you're going to find one of these bunkers.
Sure.
At some point you're going to find some of the rough. You can't get it to the flag with your second shot. And yet he just positioned his tee shots in the right place. He took on the flags he knew you could get at, didn't take on the ones he thought might be a little bit more difficult. It was an exemplary performance and many thought, will he have the nerve? Will he be a good enough putter? Yes, he had the nerve. It gave him the confidence for the putter. And at the end, you had a brilliant champion on a brilliant golf course.
Yeah, the thing for me was to have that bogey-free weekend, he had quite a few 7, 8, 9 footers for par in that run of 36 holes, and he made them all.
Got to happen.
Yeah.
You're not going to hit all of the greens, and you're not going to hit all of your seconds inside 20 feet. There will be difficult times in every round with that amount of pressure on it. And he was up to the task every time he was asked.
OK, Ewan, let's have a run through the top 10, please.
There was a three-way tie in ninth. Tony Finau, Matt Kuchar and Jordan Spieth, an American triumvirate there. Tiger Woods eventually finished in sixth place alongside Eddie Pepperell and Kevin Chappell. Xander Schauffele once again showed us what a great player he is, and he was at 6 under par alongside Kisner and McIlroy. One of the performances of the week for me was the other man alongside them, Justin Rose. He needed a 3 on Friday night to make it through to the weekend. A 4, and he's not there for the weekend. He makes the 3 and came within 2 shots of the title. But there was only one winner and only one player to celebrate at Carnoustie, Frankie Molinari.
And by the way, as a footnote, when will it ever happen again that a player in the field birdies the 18th 4 times out of 4? That was Rose. How can that ever happen again? It's impossible.
Well, the most important one I can tell you was Friday night.
Yes, oh, it was. Yeah, he was right up against it. I mean, for a player like, they always know these top players, if they can just make it through the weekend when things are going badly, it can turn on a sixpence, and it did for Justin Rose. An incredible performance. But Francesco Molinari, sensational, I have to say, and it was one of the moments of the year for me to see him as an Italian holding up that claret jug, building Italian consciousness of the game of golf with the Ryder Cup going there in 2022. Unbelievable, Bob.
It really was. I mean, he joins the ranks. Molinari, the all-time great. We have Richard Boxall, a winner of the Italian Open. A couple of names that really stand out in Italian golf history.
Yes, sometimes Richard comes here and joins us on the Race to Dubai show. He'll be pleased to listen back to that when he's full of turkey and stuffing at Christmas to hear his name mentioned in the majors edition of the Race to Dubai show. So, 3 majors down. The last one is always, of course, well, for the last time, because it changes in 2019, the USPGA Championship. It was the 100th USPGA as the final major of the year, and Brooks Koepka held off the challenges of a resurgent Tiger Woods and Adam Scott to win his second major of the season. Koepka started day 4 with a 2-shot lead, and that was how he finished. But that didn't tell the story of a dramatic final round at Bellerive. Koepka was caught by defending champion Justin Thomas on the front nine and the Australian Scott on the way home, but kept his cool to record birdies on the 15th and 16th and signed for a 66 to get to 16 under par. Woods' 64, by the way, was his lowest ever final round in a major. His birdie on the last moved him to within 1 shot of Adam Scott, who finished at 13 under par. Brooks Koepka, his tournament resume, Ewan, on the PGA Tour reads 4. 3 of them are majors.
I don't think he'll be too worried about that. But it just shows you how different majors can be. +1 in winning at Shinnecock, -16 at winning in Bellerive. So 2 totally different tests, and yet he took to them like a duck to water.
Has Koepka passed the test, Bob, of being viewed as a complete player?
I think so. I mean, certainly, even though it's extremely difficult, I would assume you could fluke out and win one major. But if you do back-to-back U.S. Opens, there's nothing fluky about that, and then you add a third. I think the astonishing part about that PGA Championship, I mean, Tiger birdied 8 of the 18 holes that he played on Sunday. I mean, birdied almost half the holes he played. And here was somebody that we never thought would even be playing golf again. Certainly not ever thinking that he'd be playing at that level once again. And it just adds a lot of fuel to the fire for the upcoming season. In 2019, Tiger has to walk away knowing that he had a great shot at the Open Championship, also played very well at the PGA Championship. Should be exciting this coming season.
Well, let's hear from the winner in St. Louis, Brooks Koepka.
To birdie 7-8-9 was kind of a big momentum shift for me, I felt like, and especially with Tiger making that run basically right at that same time when we were on, I think, 10 green, and Scotty birdied 12 and 13, and it became a really tight race. But the shots I hit coming down the stretch were very good. When I look at what I've done in the past 2 months, it's incredible. Sitting in my couch watching the Masters, to think I would do this, I would have laughed at you, and to do it, it is really incredible.
Well, now we have a bit of aftersight, not foresight really, from what Bob Bubka told us about the Jack Nicklaus conversation before the US Open with Brooks Koepka, because after the PGA, Jack tweeted, "Calm, collected, confident." That is the description of Brooks Koepka. He didn't seem aware of anyone else on the golf course, and that's what you need to do in a major. Brooks had several opportunities to give a PGA Championship away, and he was not even close. Solid as a rock down the stretch. That's confirmation indeed that you have arrived, Ewan, when you get one of those from Jack.
Yeah, never had one of these, so not really able to say much about it, but I'm sure he was thrilled about it. And once again, a lot talked about Jack as a golfer. Maybe not enough talked about as an ultimate gentleman he is. Taking the time, and whatever he said to Brooks Koepka, it certainly worked. And be interesting to see over the next few years. Brooks, of course, a very young man, to see if he can go on and add to these 3 wins.
You know, Bob, I know that Brooks spoke to Jack. I know that Rory has sought Jack's opinion. It must be fantastic for these younger players to have the greatest of all time, the GOAT, Jack Nicklaus, willing to talk to them and give them some of his free advice.
Yes, you know, because Jack is special. Certainly, we all know, and it's been widely documented, how great he was on the golf course. Sometimes a little is lost in the translation about what a wonderful family man he was. I mean, there were many events that Jack played in that he would fly home on a Friday night to watch one of his sons playing in a high school football game, fly back to the event on Saturday. Barbara Nicklaus needs a lot of credit, too. She's certainly the first lady in all of golf, proving that, you know, you can be a golfer, you can be a husband, you can be a family man. So when Jack gives advice, and that's why I go back to the fact that Brooks Koepka is wise beyond his years, seeking out advice from somebody that certainly has the answers, and the fact that Jack is so giving of himself with this advice is really incredible. And you know what, guys? It begs the question now, you know, with Koepka, with 3 majors, 2 in 1 year, is he going to get past the total of Rory McIlroy, Jordan Spieth, Mickelson, and others on that major victory list? Based on last year, you would have to say yes. Now, we all know that no matter how great you are in any given year in the world of golf, doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be great the following year unless your name happens to be Tiger Woods.
Well, Brooks, we'll get to your predictions very shortly, Bob, about 2019, but Brooks Koepka is the first man to win the US Open and USPGA Championship in the same year since Woods achieved that feat in 2000 on his way to the Tiger Slam, not in chronological order, but he had all 4 trophies on his mantelpiece at the same time, and only the 5th person to do a career slam And that's what Rory's trying to get to, and that's what Phil's trying to get to, and that's what Jordan's trying to get to. We'll see how they get on in a few months' time. His aggregate total of 264 is the joint lowest in major history, matching Henrik Stenson's score at the 2016 Open Championship at Troon. Now, some of the rest of the leaderboard. Let's hear from those in second and third, Adam Scott and Tiger Woods.
It is hard to rationalize everything after leading with four holes to play, and you want to win from that position. And I feel like I've led a lot of majors with four holes to play and not won them. But 70, 65, 65, 67 is good golf at a major championship. Just unfortunately, just didn't have it the last couple of holes.
I was pretty ticked at the British Open. I had the lead there. This one, I never quite got to the lead. I couldn't sit still and make pars and be okay with it. I had to keep making birdies. The golf course was soft. It was gettable. And Brooksy, what he's doing back there, it's tough to beat when a guy hits a 340 down the middle. And as good a putter as he is, it's tough to beat. As I said, this has been a process of building. You know, I didn't know what I was going to start this year and how many tournaments I was going to play, how well I was going to play, what swing I was going to use. But I'm in uncharted territory because there's no one's ever had a few spine hitting it like I'm hitting it. So I've had to try and figure this out on my own. And it's been really, really hard. It's a lot harder than people think.
Tiger talking about his new adjustments, really, in not only his body, but his game coming back. And, well, we know what happened at the end of the year at the Tour Championship. But for Adam Scott, he's been a little bit of an enigma over recent seasons, Ewan.
Well, thankfully, he's got a major title, winning the Masters tournament. You go back to Lytham and what happened at Lytham over the Final Four when Ernie Els snipped in there. And, you know, these things happen. You look back at all of the four majors and you go back 50 years. Things happened then as well. Players double bogeyed here. You had a card marked wrong with Roberto all these years ago. Things happen in majors. All eyes are on it. The pressure's at its height. And you could sense the disappointment from Adam there, not just talking about the PGA Championship of 2018, but the scar tissue that is maybe there from Lytham.
Can you look back, Bob, and say that you were unlucky as a player, or in the end, do you kind of get what you deserve?
Well, a lot of times you get what you deserve. Sometimes you're the benefactor of a bad shot by one of your opponents. You know, golf is very fickle, and, you know, you guys both played it at the highest level. I mean, you can address the situation a lot better than I'm equipped to do. But, you know, when you analyze it, what's the difference basically between a lip in and a lip out? You know, less than a millimeter, you know, and those little things that you don't think are important. I mean, maybe in round one, you had a ball that was going towards out of bounds. It hit something and stays inbounds. It's forgotten when you're hoisting the trophy on Sunday. But in reality, it's the reason because it did stay inbounds that you are hoisting that trophy. And that's what makes golf the great sport that it is. You have control over a lot of things, but some things are left to be controlled by others.
Ewan, top 10 from the USPGA Championship, please.
Two players in 10th, two Europeans, Rafael Cabrera-Bao, and another fine performance from England's Tyrrell Hatton. In sixth place, you've got Molinari. Thomas Peters, good to see him playing well again. It was a strange season. Justin Thomas and Gary Woodland. And into the top five, tied fourth, was Stuart Sink, the 2009 Open champion, alongside John Rahm. Adam Scott, we heard from there just a few moments ago with that slight disappointment in his voice. Third in the end it was for Adam, and Tiger Woods second to Brooks Koepka.
Bob, your favourite major of 2018 was?
Wow. Has to be Carnoustie. Being able to say on the radio that Tiger's leading the Open and we're in the fourth and final round, it was like I was dreaming and thinking of years going by. So Carnoustie gets my vote.
Ewan?
I think I would have to say Carnoustie for different reasons. Molinari, we've looked at Molinari for many years and we've always thought he should do better. We never thought he held enough putts. We always thought he was a good driver of the ball that found greens. But somehow this year, he found the secret. He found what was missing. And Bob talked about the control that these players have out there. And they don't control everything. And yet, when Molinari was at his best, this year. It looked like he did.
I know this is going to sound dull, but I have to go along with you two and go with... I thought that particular Open, the 147th Open, had absolutely everything. The scramble on the back nine, Tiger Woods hitting the front, and Francesco Molinari being the first Italian to win a major championship. It was just complete as a tournament.
And it was links golf the way it used to be.
Yeah, that's
because
right.
of the dry summer. Yeah. And then we had a little bit of rain and somehow it greened up within an hour. And yeah. it was just a magical 4 days up there by the eastern coastline.
Now, this is going to be slightly more uncomfortable the next few minutes because I'm going to go through the tips from last year. So at the Masters, I went for Rory. Ewan went for Rory. Matt Adams went for Rory. Strikeout. At the US Open, I don't see you involved in this, Bob, for some reason. I don't know why. I'm sure you were doing this show a year ago.
I think I was.
Maybe you've been expunged. So you can you are now blameless, Bob. You can listen to our efforts. At the US Open, I went for Justin Rose. You went for Tiger, which I thought was a massive call. And, you know, with Tiger's performance at the Open and the USPGA, Tiger was pretty much coming back to some sort of major winning form. Didn't quite happen. Matt went for Rose. Strikeout there. At the Open, I went for Ricky Fowler. I thought it'd be windy, and he's a very good wind player. Ewan went for Jordan Spieth. He's got previous with the Claret Jug. And Matt went for Dustin Johnson. No winners. And at the USPGA Championship, I tipped Justin Thomas to retain. Ewan went for Justin Rose, and Matt went for Jordan Spieth. So not a single winner between us in the four majors in 2018. But Bob, because you're on the show this year, that is all going to change for the next season.
Well, I certainly hope so. And I probably will pick all four winners next year. I feel a good year coming on. And I didn't have one wrong in 2018. That bodes well for 2019.
You didn't have one wrong. You picked all four winners, did you?
No.
I don't think so.
I didn't get to pick.
Oh, okay. You're carbon neutral. You're fine. Okay, let's concentrate on the Masters then in 2019 and who you feel, Bob, might get the job done.
I think Jon Rahm is going to honor the country of Spain and come out wearing an extra large, extra, extra large green jacket because he's a big guy.
Ewan?
Tiger Woods.
Now your Tiger Woods call. Last year it was outrageous. This year it is not outrageous.
No, I thought he might win. Was it the Open last year?
US Open you went for.
The US Open, yeah. I thought he had a good chance of winning that. What I saw in Atlanta was something that will live with me forever. And I saw them all coming out of the trees and the Pied Piper out in front with a red shirt on the final day. Like Bob suggested earlier in the programme there, I didn't think we'd see that again because he'd fallen so far, but it gives you an indication of the inner strength, the belief, the professionalism and the sheer raw talent that Woods has.
I'm going to say Rory again because one year I'm going to get it right. I think one year he's going to get it right and I mean, all he's got to do is par those par fives, which is play them in four. For him, they're par fours, and par the rest of the holes and he wins. We'll see. If I wasn't to pick Rory...
Oh, you want two picks?
No, I don't want two picks. I'm just going to highlight this player. If I wasn't to pick Rory, I think a player that is going to recharge his performances in 2019 and get back to the very top of his form is Sergio Garcia. I think Sergio Garcia, with the win in Spain, his performance as the record scorer in Ryder Cup history, is going to hit 2019 hard and be an unbelievable player. But I'm going to go for Rory at the Masters. So now with the rejiggle schedule, the USPGA Championship, because they're every month, it's April, May, June, July for the four majors, the USPGA Championship, Bob, at Bethpage, New York.
Well, I think Brooks Koepka is going to repeat as PGA champion at Bethpage, winning his fourth major title. The main reason I say that, Bethpage is a big, big ballpark. And that suits Brooks Koepka's game to a T. You got to hit it a mile, and you got to be able to putt. I like Brooks Koepka on Long Island to win the PGA.
You know you're next.
Yes, and I was going to go Koepka for the simple reason that he'd won back-to-back US Opens, and I thought he could win back-to-back PGAs.
Yeah, you can
but now Bob's gone. I mean, I would hate to have to share the glory of 12 months from now, so... It's going to be a raucous place. I mean, when you turn onto the 15th tee at Bethpage, it's a basin. And rowdy New Yorkers And I think someone with a calm nerve is probably going to do well there. I'm going to go Molinari.
I mean, ordinarily, you would think the way he plays, that Molinari's game is suited to a US Open, the way they set them up, generally speaking. Get it on the fairway, get it on the green, take your chances. That's a great call. I'm going to go with a man that's slightly spiky when he plays, plays with a lot of passion, sometimes loses it and then gets it back and is capable of amazing things. I'm going to go with John Rahm at the USPGA Championship in amongst the New York crowd. Yeah?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right. All right. So our producer is noting these down because at the end he's going to call them all out. Third in the major roster next year is the US Open Championship. At the comforting thought of going to Pebble Beach is pretty nice. Pebble Beach, Bob, US Open.
Well, Dustin Johnson, he has a score to settle with Pebble Beach. And wouldn't that be an amazing statistic? Two guys that work out together, play together, good friends with one another, win back-to-back Opens with Koepka winning at Shinnecock. Just Dustin Johnson is going to get the job done at Pebble Beach.
Ewan.
Yes, very difficult, Pebble Beach. It's a little bit like Augusta. You have specialised players that play well there.
True.
I can't think that the current world number two is not going to add to his US Open. So I think he'll win his second one at Pebble Beach. Justin Rose.
Justin Rose. And I'm going to counter two of you with Tiger Woods because we all know the 15-shot win that he had at Pebble Beach back in 2000. And I do agree with Ewan that he's going to be in sort of major mode this year if what we've seen at the Tour Championship continues and he's had that rest over the Christmas period. I'm going to go with Tiger at Pebble. So that leaves us with the final major of the year. It sounds funny to say this, but the final major of the year, which is going to be remarkable at Royal Portrush, the Open Championship, Bob.
Well, just remember the sight of Tiger Woods winning the Tour Championship at Atlanta and the massive gallery that was following up the 72nd hole. That's going to be duplicated at Portrush, but the guy leading the charge is going to be Rory McIlroy.
Oh, and home ground. Very good.
I had Rory McIlroy written down.
Have you another one you scrubbed out?
Well, I think Bob's actually got a camera on.
He's ruining your day, Bob.
Well, it looks like it, yeah. He's certainly doing his best to ruin
it. Yes.
I think the pressure of winning at Royal Portrush would prove to be enormous for McIlroy. But mind you, if he's won at Augusta and he's got the Grand Slam, I think he'll rather fancy his chances round there. He shot very low rounds there as a teenager. He's been round there in 60 or 61, McIlroy, albeit slightly different course because there's two new holes that came from the Valley course. So I'm backtracking now.
The world is waiting for your few syllables.
I think you should pick, because you always go last, you see, which is I think it's a big
I won't be taking one of your picks here.
On you go.
I'm going to pick Ricky Fowler to break his major championship duck at the US Open Championship at Royal Portrush. And I think his chances are going to be even greater if it's a breezy Open. So for me, it's going to be Ricky Fowler.
I'm going to go for John Rahm.
Okay.
He's already won in Ireland. He's the Irish Open champion. Not this year, but last year. Remember?
Oh, Ballyliffin.
Port Stewart. That's the one. So I am going to go for Rahm. I think he's about ready. 25, is he, years of age? Coming to maturity. He's already had good finishes in majors. We talked about that a little earlier. Fourth in the Masters at 11 under par there. He was also fourth in the PGA. So I'm thinking that Rahm's going to be knocking on the door. The interesting thing there is we've got no Bubba Watson.
Look at the players we've left out. You're right.
No Jordan Spieth.
Yep.
We've got no Xander Schauffele, who was second in the Open Championship. So it's a tremendously difficult thing to do because so much depends on form at that time. But the fact the majors are closer together, if you can hit form at the right time, I think it's possible you could win two of them this year.
I mean, a Tommy Fleetwood could win a major championship.
Another one we haven't mentioned.
That's right. There are so many good players that could break through and win their first or indeed improve their major resume. It's going to be a fascinating year, that's for sure. Does that help the golfing calendar, Bob, in your opinion, that the USPGA Championship has been brought forward?
Well, we're going to have to wait and see. I mean, the weather is one of the concerns. I mean, quite frankly, Beth Page in May can be absolutely delightful, or it can be rainy and quite cool. So it's a big gamble, but I like everything being condensed. I like the fact that golf really at the highest level will be finished before September. I think it's the right thing for the world of golf, and I'm glad it's been moved. I like the Players' Championship going back to March. It's a much harder golf course to navigate in March than it was, you know, in May. So all in all, 2019, the combination of the new condensed schedule with the venues for the majors and a resurgence of Tiger Woods, those three factors could make 2019 a truly year to remember.
Now, wherever you're listening to this podcast, I just need you to know that Bob, Ewan and myself, you might think we just sit here and spit out names. This carries on for the entire year. We get to the Masters and we're nervous because all of us, the three of us, want to have picked the winner and the Race to Dubai show at the first major. And if you miss that one, we pick the winner at the USPGA. And it continues for the whole season. There's bragging rights attached to this, Ewan.
Yes, there is. For me, I think it's good the PGA's moved to May. The only thing, I'd like to see it on television. And the Professional Golfers Association is worldwide. And last year, no one could see it on television in the British Isles here, which I think is wrong. Wrong because of the Professional Golfers Association. It's not in their ethics to do that. Internet connection has to be perfect to watch it. I understand where they're trying to go, but I'd really like to see it on TV. I remember seeing Belle Reve when Nick Price won back in 1992 and thinking what a beautiful place it was and never really got the chance to see it. So out of the four majors, yes, I was at the Masters and the US Open and the Open Championship, but I'd rather miss the PGA this year.
So maybe that'll all come to fruition and it'll all be all neatly packaged, hopefully, for 2019. As Bob said, the venues, the excitement levels with Woods back, it's going to be an incredible season. That's about it for now. We hope you've enjoyed our review of the major championship schedule from this year, 2018. Here's hoping the next four are also full of drama and excitement. That's a guarantee. Join us next week for a preview of the 2019 season. Until then, you can stay up to date with all the latest news on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and Snapchat, and via europeantour.com or by downloading the official app. And do leave us a review if you're downloading the podcast from Audioboom, iTunes, or Apple Podcasts. But until then, from Ewan Murray.
Goodbye.
Bob Bubka.
See you guys.
And me, Robert Lee. Goodbye and Happy New Year.